Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren, and riding on the side, we've got Mr. David Rose North Martino.
Here we go. We're going to add another name.
Yeah, it's perfect. Rose Tattoo.
It's Rose again?
It's Rose. Yeah, it's the Rosie week.
Rosie.
The week is Rosie.
All good things.
Well, I wouldn't say that. But So interesting show today. We've got someone that's kind of all over the place and doing publishing and writing and comedy and radio. And I even think he's a stripper from what I hear, but I don't know.
Oh.
We'll find out. And you know, the strangest thing, I noticed he's from the UK and he's living now in the US. So that always makes me wonder. Running from the law, you know? Anyway, so we'll find out. So joining us now on the line, we've got Mr. James H. Longmore. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So you're welcome. We're glad to have you. And so you went from Yorkshire to Texas. Like, what's wrong with you?
Well, my ex-wife is from here. We met over there and came over here and got divorced.
So it's a green card. Okay, now.
So what I do, I'm actually applying for citizenship this year for my sins, but again, being a Yorkshireman, that's more of a financial decision, because then you get that, then I don't have to reapply for my green card because it's 7 years or whatever. So there's that. I like it here. I like the warmth. I mean, Houston gets damned hot in the summer, but you know, I like it. The people are very similar to Yorkshire people. Actually, Texas is very, very insular. You know, we meet a Texan over there. In England or wherever, and they're from Texas. Yeah, Texas first, and then I'm American. Same with Yorkshire people. You know, we're Yorkshire people first and foremost. we don't like to be lumped in with the rest of the British people. So again, the mentality is very similar. So I mean, they're great people here. I like it. You know, the kids are doing well. You know, it's good education for the children. And I think for what I do, obviously writing wise, publishing wise, I don't think I could have certainly done it to the amount of success in England as here. I mean, it's a bigger market for starters. You got more people to go at, which is a good start.
Yeah. You can win by just volume, not even quality.
Well, you know, that's not our mission statement at Hellbound, but to be honest, we try to go for, we aim for quality. When we started the company, and it was started because in my early days of being published, you know, I had some pretty bad experience at the hands of indie publishers, and wanted to give authors, certainly up and coming authors, a better experience. You know, so I literally took everything that had happened to me and did the opposite. And people like that. You know, they like to be treated properly and be listened to and all the rest, and paid. People get their royalties, which can be a rarity.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole new business side of this with the Amazon opening the doors, there's, you really don't know who you can trust, unless you work with them or unless you know people that do. So it's kind of a, it can be a shady business.
Yeah, it is. There's a bunch of, you know, small presses that were around when we started. When we officially launched, well, we launched as an LLC on January the 1st, 2016, but we were sort of going, you know, we were just sort of getting things started before that. There's a bunch that no longer around. We, over the past 6 years, we've seen them pop up and go away again. and we've just, you know, kept our head down. We stayed out of drama, focused on quality, putting out good stuff. And it's a formula that's worked. You know, we managed through the COVID years, where, you know, a lot of people struggled through that. Obviously, it was not an easy time, but, we stuck to our core values, which literally, and again, my business partner, Xtina, will vouch for me. And you know, I said, our core value, first core value is no drama. We don't get involved in online, you know, social media drama that like a lot do. And you see this as soon as they engage in that, you know, it's the death knell. You know what's in, you know, you can pretty much count down to when they announce that they're closing the doors for whatever reason, you know. So, but we just kept that. And we've had people, and there's a lot of haters in the industry, you know, I've had people taking a pop at us, and for whatever reason, you know, it can be jealousy, it can be because somebody's rejected them or whatever. And we never, because they want their minute of their moment on social media, and we just refuse to give them that. People deal with them professionally, obviously, but like I say, you know, long story short, it's about quality product, and we put out some phenomenal product, great writers, you know. So
So you hire a hitman to keep people off your back.
Well, as I say, I'm a Yorkshireman. I don't believe in subcontracting. Anything like that, I would do myself. Well, I'm not paying out good money for somebody to do that. No.
That's true. I mean, I like that. But does it worry you at all being in publishing and being so open? Like literally, Dave over there could open up Rose Publishing tomorrow. Yeah. Exactly. You know what I mean? Yes. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, and then he could bring people on and do things. Mm-hmm. And with so much of that stuff going on, I think for me, what I'm saying is there's the access is great. And yeah, you can have a proper formula and go, okay, we want quality, we want good stuff, good covers, everything, and release it and be all that. But isn't it hard to kind of get respect for the kind of work you're doing with so many other presses and self-publishing out there?
Well, I mean, respect is earned. I mean, as with anything, the fact that we've been around, the number of years we've been around, speaks volumes. The fact that we have good products, and we attract, you know, big names now. By all means, that you have at it, mate. You know, you open up your small press and let's see, see how long that goes. You may do phenomenal. I mean, we did. We started up front with 5 books, and 2 of which were mine, actually, just to make the numbers up. I threw in a couple of mine. I get asked this a lot, you know, and I don't want to come off as sounding conceited, because I'm not. A lot of the ones that pop up and fail, it's, you know, writers, you know, a writer or a couple of writers get together and say, oh, right, let's do our, you know, let's do our own publishing house and we'll do really well and, you know, the rest of it, which is fine because they know writing. Invariably, they're not business people. And, you know, you get this whole, oh, you know, publishing house, we treat it. It's like one big family. Well, Hellbound Books isn't one big family. Hellbound Books is a business. My background is in business. I work for some big company like Toyota. I've worked for Duracell. I've worked for LoJack, you know, so big, you know, and I'm trained through sales and marketing and business. So I understand. You know, I remember there's one small publisher popped up, I think they lasted about a year, and, oh, we're offering 50% royalties to all our, you know, and we're doing this and doing that. And I said, well, it's just, you know, I know what's sustainable and what isn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so it's that mix. I guess it's a that mix of business and obviously being a writer as well. So I have a foot in both camps. And you look at the likes of, you know, Cemetery Dance, you look at the likes of Joe Meinhardt at Crystal Lake, you know, there's some good people there. And those are the sort of companies that when we started, we said that's where we want to be. You know, we want to be there with Rich Chismar and Joe Meinhardt. And, you know, we sort of, you know, modeled ourselves on them, and they are incredibly successful. So that's the plan anyway. We've got a ways to go yet, but the way we're going is, you know, it's certainly in the right direction.
Well, I know you've written about this in the horror zine. I was just wondering, what do you look for in a submission for Hellbound Books?
First and foremost is a damn good story. It has to be a good story. You know, it's got to have, you know, for me, beginning, a middle, and an end, in that order. We get a lot of submissions, be it, you know, for the anthologies, be it for novels. If it's a well-worn trope, if it's vampires, if it's werewolves, if it's your zombies or, you know, COVID-based, we've had a lot of pandemic. Please, if anybody's listening, don't send us any more pandemic. You know, we're living it. I don't want to read about it as well, you know, unless if it's different, we look for different, you know, a different spin on it. That's, you know, so you can have our upcoming werewolf anthology. You know, we've gone to, Jeannie has gone to great pains to make sure that the story's bringing something fresh to the trope. Good writing, obviously. You know, we like our, you know, gore and, you know, a little bit of steaminess and what have you. But, you know, again, a lot of people think horror is just writing page after page of brutal blood and guts and that. And it's just, you know, you need the context, is what I'm saying. And again, it's going to make me sound pedantic, but, you know, we like to see someone has actually read our guidelines. You know, we're not, you know, too strict, but, you know, a certain font size, a certain layout we ask for and what have you. And we get, you'd be surprised what we get. And he said, people say, oh, well, I don't understand Microsoft Word or whatever. You know, it's like trying to be a brain surgeon, yeah, with a spoon. If you're going to do it, you need to learn the tools of the trade. If you're going to be a car mechanic, you need to learn how to use the tool. You know what I'm saying? So somebody who doesn't have a basic grasp of how to lay out and how to write properly, you know, and it's not difficult to learn, you know, do a lot of reading and see how it's done and figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm sounding like a monster now. Ask me my charity work or something. Work with puppies. I mean,
we don't care about charity. Come on.
No. Well, we should make sure I know you mentioned it, but we should definitely plug the Horror Zine's Book of Werewolf Stories.
Absolutely. Why is that then? Could somebody here be on it or in it?
No.
Well, Ramsey can't, isn't it?
Yeah, Ramsey, he is. Ramsey's a great, great guy. Yeah, great guy.
Well, it's gonna do real well. You got Mr. Dave Martino in it, so
that's right.
I've never. Never heard of him. But
no, neither have I.
Nobody has.
To be honest.
No.
But after this, yeah, everyone's going to hear of him. I mean,
it's great bathroom reading.
It definitely, yeah. So is our renowned series, since I have the third edition of The Toilet Zone, which was actually my brainchild, because I, as my daughter will testify, I really haven't mentally developed beyond 12, to be honest. And I actually sat down and I calculated the average length of time someone has a sit-down visit to the toilet, and then the average reading speed, and then I worked out an average, the perfect story length. And it's around 4,000 words. The average story length, and we've got volume one and volume two out. Volume three is hopefully going to be out later this month. Packed with sit-down length stories, so you can have it. We actually have both issues in our downstairs bathroom. So, you know, people go, you just sit and you read a story, then you know you're finished, you know. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Again, packed with brilliant, brilliant stories, you know.
Good word.
All packed. It's a good word, isn't it? It's a good word.
Yeah. Do you have a constipated edition?
Well, there'll just be one long story, like a 600-word volume of one story.
Yeah, constipated edition for the person that has to be there longer than normal.
We should do that. We need to do the constipate and allow, novellas in there. That's six novellas in there. Yeah.
Now, I noticed in some of your books that you tend to have a... kind of a sense of humor as well as kind of an erotic sensuality and kind of horror all in one. When you do something like that, do you find that you have to be careful on how you approach that and what you actually make fun of?
No.
Good.
In a word.
So you're not worried. Like, I'm just, because the times being what they are, and especially the last few years, there's a lot of people that, you know, the offended, the triggering, and all this stuff going around. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you have to really worry about any government agency taking you down, but just the whole sensitivity of things. And I look at something like, so what caught my eye too is you have that I am Joe's unwanted penis. And of course, I want Joe's penis personally. I look for Joe's penis. So I'm sort of thinking that's a really good title. And then I read what it's about, and you're really kind of talking about having your penis removed, someone that's, you know, to become a woman. And I think this, and discarding it. And I think that's funny. But that might get people upset. But you don't care. You just kind of go with what
you're doing. No, honestly, and again, I mean, I sound like a monster. I don't care. If somebody's going to be offended, well, don't read it. You know, I mean, that was written a while ago. It's actually pre Donald Trump, because there's a great Donald Trump gag about it. Seriously, you need to read the book. Give me your address afterwards. I'll send you a copy. It's a bizarro novel. It's very tongue-in-cheek, very, very dark. There's a lot of humor in there. There's even I even wrote a Dr. Seuss-style rhyme in the middle of it. But, you know, it was actually inspired by the Caitlyn Jenner story. Again, it's going back a few years now, one of my earliest ones. And it's literally, again, I don't know, I've had advanced years now, but there was a great series of books. It used to be sections in Reader's Digest. It was a series of books called in England, it was called I Am John's, like, stomach, I Am John's heart, I Am John's whatever body part. And then it would, like, give you the whole rundown of that body part from its point of view. Over here it was I Am Joe's, yeah? Look it up. And there was, I mean, again, I love that. I mean, I'm by education, I'm a zoologist, so I have a strong biology background. So I was fascinated by those as a kid, and obviously fast forward a lot of years. And I thought, yeah, let's do the story from the point of view of the penis that is removed, part of the operation, and its quest to get back to its person. And that's how, and it's fun. You know, it meets other body parts along the way, and there's friendships, and it's like a buddy sort of book. And yeah, it's good. As far as offending people, no, I'm a writer. I'm a horror writer. I've also been a comedian. And you can't self-censor. For me, people get too easily offended these days, you know? They get offended by words. They get offended by, you know, it's just like, seriously, get over yourselves, you know? I grew up in a time when people didn't get offended, you know, didn't choose to get offended by ridiculous things. So,
Well, yeah, the day where you don't like something, you don't read it, you don't buy it, or you don't listen to it. You go, well, that's a terrible show. You turn it. You just don't. You
know. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you've done, as you were saying, you've done stand-up comedy, and which takes comedic timing. Do you think writing dark comedy and fiction also requires a level of timing?
Definitely, yeah. Prose? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's I think you said before, earlier, I mean, it's a careful mix, you know? You've got to infuse it in the right places. And there is comedy in every, even the darkest situation, there is humor always there. And like you're saying, everything I've written, there's always that dark vein of humor. If it's not like, you know, Joe's Penis, it is out deliberately set out to be comedic, you know? I find, you know, you sprinkle a bit of comedy, usually just before something really nasty happens, and it gives you that wonderful sort of contrast. Yeah? You've got the chuckling away at that as a boom, something horrible happens, and it just makes it all the more horrible. And you'll find that in a lot of horror movies. You know, horror movies done well, you know, they will do pretty much the same sort of thing. It's not just, and I've seen some movies where it's just been unrelenting, dark, 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 and it just gets boring. You become desensitized to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, a golden moment, Jaws, for example, you know, he's shoveling the chum in the, you know, off the back of the boat. He said, you should try shoveling the
chum. How dare
boom,
you?
Boom, the shark fish. I mean, that golden moment, absolutely. But that's the sort of effect that I try to create.
How much of you do you put in the stories? Like, you know, of course, the story's not you intentionally, but with writing in horror comedy like this, how much of you, your own personality goes into it?
A lot. I mean, put it this way, I will never have to write my autobiography because it's sort of sprinkled across everything I write. Even when I ghostwrite for people, you know, there's always little bits of me in there, you know? And Tenebrion, which is set in the wonderful world of the independent film communities. I was part of, I did a few short movies in that in the Houston film community. And that's probably got the most of me in it because, again, it comes from personal experience of being in that environment. And, it's funny, somebody actually commented and said, none of the characters are really likable. And I said, well, if you'd ever spent any time in the Houston film community, you'd know how accurate that was.
Well, there you have it. But so what part of you went into Joe's unwanted penis?
Probably the fact that it is a really massive penis. I think that's probably the bit that I brought to the table.
Of course.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, it's a very massive unwanted penis, right? So.
You know, that's the story of my life right now, I have to say.
Well, I'll get to work on that, you know. It's funny, but so what do you, because we talk to a lot of fiction writers, crime fiction and true crime and all that sort of stuff, and there's always kind of a point and subtexts and all these things going on. Do you layer any of these stories? Do you have a subtext? Do you have a point that you want to get across to someone, even though they're entertained and having a good time with the comedy and some of the horror and all that? All of that's there, but underneath and at the end of the book, I'm finished reading it. Is there something you're trying to tell me?
You know, I honestly, I don't think so. No, I want to tell a damn good story, you know, whether it's about, you know, demons or giant creatures or unwanted penises or whatever. I just want to tell the story. If there's any subtext there, I guess it's subconscious. You know, I don't deliberately set out, right, I'm going to write this book, but it's really about, you know, you know, really about how fictional the moon landings are. No. I mean, there may be the odd one-liner that if I want to put a point across that I feel, you know, I'll slip that in there, then I can do that. But there's never an ulterior motive with me. Yeah, what you see is what you get.
What do you get out of writing a book?
I think the big thing is I get it out of my head. I get all these thoughts. You know, you can speak to other writers. Obviously, you do. You know, we write because we have to. If it wasn't, well, all these stuff in our head would stay there and probably drive us insane. So I get that. I get, you know, the sense of achievement of doing it. It's something I've always wanted to do. So I love the whole thing. And I guess it's the love of doing something that I enjoy.
That's it's an interesting process. What do you dislike about writing the most?
writing. if there's somewhere I could just, you know, have the idea and hit a button and it would just do it, that would be great. But I don't know. I mean, it's one of these. I'm going to say the middle bit, because no matter what I'm writing, I think this is a common thing with a lot of writers, is you start off the beginning and it's fresh and it's new and it's like, whoa, this is brilliant. And you get to that halfway point. And for me, whether it's a novel, a novella, a short story, gets to that halfway point and my brain's just like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do something else. And it's just slogging through. Because then, you know, once you get into the final stretch, you're in the finale, then the last, you know, quarter of the book, then it's exciting again, because you're bringing things together and you've got the heart pumping race against time or whatever. But that middle bit is the worst. It really is. And I've actually got a couple of novels that I've got to that middle bit and been unable to push through. And they're still half, they're just half a novel. And probably will never be finished, because I tried and tried and tried and just couldn't get through that.
Maybe put that in your Toled anthologies for the quick ones.
People will be able to have time to read half the story. Yeah, I mean, that could be it, you know. But there's a couple of them I really do want to finish. But again, I've got a stockpile of, I think, at least three novels I just need to sit down and finish them. I've just been that busy, obviously, with the publishing and with ghostwriting that I'm kind of in demand as a ghostwriter these days. So, but I need, it's one of those things, I need to make time to do that, but I also need to pay the mortgage. So,
well, with such a massive penis, you should be in command.
Well, as you say, since my days as a stripper sort of waned, you know, it's not the same as it was.
It's not the same as it was. Yeah, I get that feeling. What do you think about the horror community and the horror world, even in general? How do you think it's changed with social media?
I think, I mean, on the whole, the horror community is tremendous. I mean, it is just so many wonderful people. We are the most affable, nice people you could ever, you know. And again, a lot of people think, oh, you know, you've got to be something wrong with you because you write all this stuff, and it's the opposite. Because we write all this stuff and we get it out, we are incredibly well balanced people.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news, ad free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
People, so the people are great. The community, I mean, since I've been in it, you know, I mean, social media is a platform for drama. And those that love drama, no matter what community you're in, will create drama. That's the part I don't like. For me, I mean, social media for me is about, you know, it's for marketing, it's for networking. And we do that pretty well. We actually have people do that. Pay people to do that for us because I don't have the time to spend on Facebook unless it's posting and popping pictures or whatever. I mean, long story short, you know, they're great people. I mean, how it was 20 years ago, I don't know. I mean, they all seem to have been, it was always great. I remember as a kid watching, the talk shows back in England and, you know, finding out that, so like Stephen King was friends with James Herbert and they knew Clive Barker and all these people, they were all sort of, you know, friends together, they knew each other on some level. I love that, you know, and I don't know if that's the same with other, you know, whether the romance genre or sci-fi or whatever, they all know each other. But, yeah, I like that. And they're all great people like, you know, so we deal with Ramsey Campbell and the guy is an absolute legend. There's a hero of mine from many, many years ago. And they're just great people. He posts pictures of his jigsaw puzzles that he does and he's very approachable and, you know, they're great people, absolutely great people.
Yeah, speaking of that, you know, the 80s for horror and early 90s were huge, and I remember reading Ramsey Campbell in the in high school, actually, and it's, you know, it's kind of amazing to be in a book with him right now. But do you think that horror is having, like, a big comeback, a resurgence?
Well, I'm not sure that it ever went away, to be honest. I mean, the 80s was a boom time. Because, you know, we had the I guess the advent of splatterpunk. I mean, James Herbert is lauded as being the godfather of splatterpunk. So we had that. We had then obviously the whole the movies, the video, the VHS boom. And if you want to read more about it, VHS, the Video Nasties from Hellbound Books, available in hardback and available in colour and black and white. Which is literally details all the whole Video Nasty phenomenon in the 80s. So we had that going on. The books, I mean, obviously Steve King was really coming into his own during the 80s. He wrote probably some of his best stuff in the 80s. So I forgot the question now. the Nasties thing gave it a bit of a bad turn, but, I think it's always been there. Movie-wise, it's big now because, you know, people do all the remakes. And horror movies are, relatively speaking, are cheap to produce. And there's been some big hitters, like The Ritual, for example, or Witch, that sort of thing, that have really made money for the studios. And independent studios are more likely to take on, you know, an unknown. You know, they're not all just doing Stephen King remakes. So, yeah, it's nice. For me, it's always been there. I think if that's your interest, you know, you can always find it. But even now, you know, we are still seeing very much of the poor relation in the literary world. You know, there are bookstores that don't have a horror section, or if they do, it's Stephen King. That's it. And there are so many great horror writers out there that it is a shame. You know, it galls me when, you know, they made another Batman movie. I mean, first of all, why? You know, why, seriously, why? We know the story. It's the same damn story. Oh, it's darker. I don't care. It's still...
How dare
Batman,
you?
I have to swear. Sorry, you can bleep that out in post. It's the same story. It's the same... Yes, his parents got shot. Yes, his... Da-da-da-da. Oh, and he's got a nice car. Da-da. And it's... Seriously. Having said that, when it comes on to Netflix, I'll probably sit and watch it. But they're remaking and reading, and it's Marvel, it's DC, it's the same. And then, let's remake, you know, a Stephen King movie because it did well in 1991. We're going to remake it, you know. And yet I see all this brilliant original stuff that would make tremendous movies, and they just don't even get a chance, which is terrible. It really is.
Must be kind of a safety thing, like a you know, they're going to remake Stephen King. It's just they feel there's an in, you know, it's already going to make it.
Well, I mean, it's a two-edged thing. I mean, one, it means they don't have to buy the rights because they still they have them, you know, so they don't have to do that. And two, yeah, you put, you know, Stephen King's whatever, you know. And as well, there's the nostalgia wave as well. You know, people, oh, I remember seeing Pet Sematary back in whenever it came out, 82, 83, and it was great. And that, oh, I'm going to watch, see what. And to be fair, with all due respect, it was bloody awful.
Yeah, it was terrible.
As soon as you say it's a reimagining, it's like, no, that means, you know, we've ruined it. You know, so, but again, yeah, you put Stephen King's name on it and boom, you know, you're going to get bums on seats. You're going to get people downloading on the streaming platforms, etc. But yeah, you're right. It's safe. It's safe. And again, I guess, you know, the movie business is a business. You know, they want to make money. They don't, you know, want to just be nice. You know, they're in it to make profit.
Yeah. How do you think horror's changed since, you know, over your life?
It's certainly got, it's certainly got more visceral. I mean, my very first exposure to grown-up horror was actually James Herbert's The Rats when I was back in middle school. So some kid brought it in and I borrowed it and read it. It was just like, blew me away. Because, I've been reading, you know, the kids' sort of horror stories and what have you. And sort of getting, you know, more and more grown-up. But horror is sort of, yeah, it's become more visceral, because they've more, use the word, you know, like more, you know, true to life, I guess. You know, I grew up on the Hammer horror films, for example. Right. You know, the old, it was Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing. It was very hokey. It was hammy. It was fun. Yeah. I think certainly horror now, again, we went through the wave of it just being gore. I mean, a lot of the 80s stuff was just gore for its own sake, you know, cheap splatter effects. And now it's become, I think it's become more intelligent. You know, the gore is used to good effect, I think, mostly. I mean, you still get, again, we all love a good slasher movie, but, you know, I like the more sort of the cerebral, the stuff that gets in your head. The stuff that, I think, is Dave said, you know, that, you know, you put the book down, you finish the movie, and you're still thinking about it. And I think there's more and more of that. And it's, I guess, as it's chasing the mainstream. But again, horror will always be that poor relation, which is a shame. This is some of the best literature and best movies have been horror.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of movies, I know you write some screenplays. What's your experience been with the film industry?
Oh, that's a real question. Boy. That is a can of worms. I started off writing some screenplays when I moved here and started writing in earnest. That is why I write books now. You know, you write a screenplay, no matter how good it is, you know, if I read a statistic just the other day, the tiny number of, you know, movie screenplays that are optioned, the even tinier number that are optioned from unknowns, and then the even tinier number of those that are actually made. I think it's one of those, unless you know somebody or know somebody or what have you, it's an impossible task, I would say, certainly as an unknown. Having said that, you know, write a book, and you said, you know, with Amazon and the other platforms, you can get your book out there. That can be a foot in the door. I mean, look at, okay, 50 Shades of Grey, look at The Martian that started off as self-published, and they built a following, and then they were picked up. That is the better way for me to do that. When I speak to other authors, you know, so I'm writing this screenplay and I'm going to send it to the people who do Marvel movies, or, you know, just don't. Although having said that, I mean, screenplays for me, it was a great way to hone dialogue skills. You know, I read a lot of Tarantino scripts and a lot of, you know, good movie scripts, all them, favorite movie scripts, and read through those to see how they did the dialogue, you know, and that helped. But I think if you're trying to write a screenplay that then you're going to sell to Steven Spielberg, I think really it's not going to happen. Turn that screenplay into a book, get the book out there, and then, you know, then send a book to copy the book to Spielberg.
Yeah, or either sleep your way to the top.
Well, I tried that, and here I am.
Well, you're at the top, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, I might. It's just okay, brilliant. Well, there you go. It worked.
Well, speaking of writing writing dialogue, I was just wondering how you experience your characters. Do you have an inner monologue? Can you hear them? I'm just trying to find out if you're hearing voices.
Absolutely, yes. Yes. And it's funny, you know, there are times when I'll, you know, either in the wee hours of the night when I'm laid awake because I can't sleep or whatever. Sometimes I find myself, I wonder what so-and-so's doing now. And then it takes a second or two for, hang on, you made him up. But, you know, when I'm in the middle of writing a novel, you know, the people become very real. I can, yeah, you're right, I can hear how they speak, you know, the pattern of their speech, what they would say. And like you say, if I'm writing and I write a line of dialogue, you say, well, he wouldn't say that. I mean, he wouldn't say that like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's again, you're right to yourself. You know, these people, they take on a life of their own, even so much as, you know, I always start out with a plan. Otherwise I meander. I would end up with like a 1,000-page book that was really nicely written, but nobody knew what the hell was going on. So I have to work to a plan. But even with that, you know, the characters, once they take on that life of their own, you find them taking you in different directions. But yeah, so yeah, I mean, long story short, yes, I do hear voices, don't you?
Always.
Yeah, he's
there you go.
He's psychotic. Yeah, well, so did you hear?
Well, that helps.
Well, yeah, did you hear Bruce Penis talk to you too then, or Bruce Jenner's?
Oh, the penis. Yeah, well, he was a character. He was a great little character. So a great big character. But yeah, absolutely. He was a character like any other. And, one of my favorites, actually. He had a, yeah.
He talked to you.
He had it going on. He knew what he wanted and he was damn well going to go get it. And I admired him for that.
He slept his way to the top.
And it was funny because I even, you know, as bizarre literally as that book is, I even spent a fair bit of time working out how he would move, how he would get around. Seriously. I actually sat and I thought that, again, with my zoology background, you know, I sort of compared him to different similarly shaped creatures. And would he slither like a snake? Would he inch along like an inchworm? Would he, you know? Yeah. Hmm.
Do you act out your character roles?
Not that one, no.
Well, just I thought I'd check. But you do other ones.
I'm not sure about acting out. Mentally, yeah. Mentally, I will act out scenes that they're in. Yeah.
No, it's just we've had writers that will actually dress up and do the part. So, you know.
Interesting.
But we don't have them on after that.
Yeah, so, of course. So, you know. It's probably just I would tip off the police, yeah, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a little bit much. What is James' structure like then? So do you have to be in a certain mood to write, or can you just do it off the whim? Can someone just say that you've got 3 hours today and you can just sit down and do it? What's it work? How does it work for you?
Well, for me, I have to have structure. I mean, all of my school reports from, you know, elementary school, middle school, and into high school. So I'm very easily distracted. Always have been. You know, I'm the guy who I was sat there. I'm supposed to be working and I'm actually watching a squirrel or something, you know. So, but I set aside, mostly mornings. That's when my creative brain is at its best. And I set myself a word target of 3,000 words a day. And I try to get those done in the morning time, and then I have the rest of the day to do business stuff and other things that I need to do. And I have to literally sit down and make myself do it. And I read somebody wrote an article a while ago saying, you know, we creativity and we don't force it. But you know, when it's your livelihood, you do have to force it. I mean, certainly when I'm looking at ghostwriting, If I don't force it and I don't write, I don't eat, and it's that simple. So it's helped me to have that discipline, which is important. I know. I think Joe Lansdale, he does. I think he might do 3 hours in the morning, and then that's it. you know, but he knows, right, I've done that, that's out the way, I can do other stuff. There are other writers I know that just think they can, as and when it suits them, you know? Mm.
And what's your atmosphere? Do you have to have, like, heavy metal music playing, or do you play, like, ballet in the background? Like, what, or do you have...
You know, again, it's the easily distracted thing. I have to have silence, because otherwise I have music and I'd be listening to music, you know. So I need to, I have a nice sort of office set up now, and, you know, it's me most of the time. I've got my dogs, who, you know, and it's great if they want to go out, that gives me a bit of a 5 minute break, which is terrific. Otherwise I just sit and pee myself, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah, structure is important, you know, I guess because it's a profession. You know, if it was just me writing as I felt like it, then I probably wouldn't get as much done, because I can actually take that discipline for my own work as well.
Mm. So can you read other people's books and stories while you're writing, or do you have to be kind of closed off with all that?
I can. I mean, I can do that. I don't get much time to read for pleasure these days, between obviously writing and with Hellbound, you know, we read submissions and we're doing all of that, you know, so I don't have a lot of chance. I bought for pleasure and started reading was Joe Hill's The Fireman. Mm-hmm. Big Joe Hill fan. I think I had about three chapters. I mean, this is probably 6 years ago now. Put about three chapters in, and then, you know, life and work happens. So, I mean, I bought some in the meantime, and they're on my shelf, and I will get around to them one day.
Put them down in the bathroom.
Well, I read my toilet zones then, you know.
Oh, busy man. So, horror zine, like, what is horror zine all about?
That's genius, that. It's, I mean, it's been going a long time. I mean, she, I'm not sure how we got to know Jeannie. I think she may have approached us, or anyway, we got to know each other, I think, in one way or another in the community. I mean, horror zine is a great publication. She publishes some tremendous people, tremendous authors. Her sort of trope is the more, I guess, the more gentle side of horror. You know, she doesn't go for blood and guts and sex and all the rest of it. But she, like the traditional, your great ghost, the atmospheric ghost stories and the werewolf stuff is brilliant, but it's not over the top. Obviously, yeah, good old traditional horror, I think, with the horror scene. And we're absolutely delighted that she approached us with the ghost stories book. And, you know, we got along well enough for her to talk to us about the werewolf book. The next one, which will be, I believe, next year, is a monsters book. So, you know, it's a nice association for us to have.
Yeah. So if someone's never heard of you before, which I don't know how that could be, and they were, if you were to choose one book for them to read of yours, which one would it be?
Oh, well, you can't get me. I can't choose. It would depend on who they were. I think, okay, I would say my short story collection, Blood and Kisses. When I'm introduced to an author, one of the first things I do is see if they've got a short story collection, because you get a nice mix. My collection goes right from my very first published short right through to a couple that I wrote specifically for that. But yeah, if you want a good broad mix of your author, I mean, I was introduced to Stephen King. Was it Night Shift, his short story collection? I mean, going back many, many years now. And absolutely loved it. So yeah, I would say, yeah, go for the short story collection and then work your way through from that.
Yeah, yeah. So how do people get a hold of you? What's the website they should go to?
Hellboundbooks.com.
Okay, and do you interact with them on social media as well, or is it at all, or is it just paid for then?
We have social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, Goodreads, you name it, we're on it. I don't personally interact with people on that, because I just haven't got the time, unfortunately. If people email, you know, I'll happily always reply to emails. You know, hit us up on social media, and if it's a question that you know, I need to field, and it's sent to me, and I will deal with that. So, yeah, I said the website, you know, there's the email address is on there. Drop us an email. Probably the best thing.
Tinder, Grindr, anything like that?
I'm on all of those. All of them. Somebody actually said, and I was a bit insulted, said, there's one called Silver Daddies. And it's like, seriously?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm on there.
No. And then there's Sugar Daddies, which is not what I thought. Sugar Daddies, like, all these nubile young women who want men with money, well, you know, barking up the wrong tree with me, I don't really.
No, Silver Daddies just likes the older daddy type with gray hair.
No, Silver Daddy, no, actually, Silver Daddy is for older men to hook up with older men,
oh.
I'm told. No, I did actually look at it, and it's like, okay, moving on. Oh. not really my bag, but yeah, I'll stick to Tinder and Grindr and Bumble and whatnot. Bumble's great. I love Bumble. I just like the word. It's a great word.
Well, so, of course, we'll put all that up on our website. People can find you with...
Brilliant. Thank you.
It's all there, and, you know. Any issues over the COVID? Like, does COVID sort of interfere in the publishing world and the writing world for you?
Do you know, it hasn't. Obviously, 2020 was a nerve-wracking year. Nobody knew what was going to happen. I mean, if anything, I mean, people were reading more books. I guess people were stuck at home, and they couldn't go out. They couldn't do anything, and you know, people were buying more books, which is, you know, I guess good for the publishing industry. But I think Ingram, Spark, and Amazon, I think, used it as an excuse to put print costs up. Yeah. But other than that, no, it was business as usual. And for me, I work from home anyway. I've been working from home since 2010. Really no change. People say, oh, you can't go out. Well, I never went out anyway.
Yeah.
So it's been business as usual for me.
Yeah, but just the stress level. So, like, when the country's all freaking out and there's issues, and, you know, Donald Trump was in, there's a lot of tension and fighting, and there still is, and then you got COVID, and you got anti-mask rallies, and you got, you know, all this stuff is happening outside your door, so to speak. Are you still able to write in the horror area fine, or does it add to it or take away from it?
No, if anything, it's nice to be, it's a nice shut off from all the crap that's going on out there. Although, yeah, I mean, you know, again, people obviously writing a lot of pandemic stuff and a lot of horror, you know, that sort of disease sort of horror. I guess they've got to up the ante now. One of the biggest things, obviously, is you're writing. Do you write in COVID? I actually Ghost wrote a book a couple just before COVID, and it was like, well, do we go back to it and build COVID in? I mean, well, how do you do? I've noticed, like, a lot of movies now, if at all they mention it, but it's not involved. Does that make sense?
Right.
But I am actually rewriting a ghost written book that somebody else ghost wrote for a client of mine, or actually building in the whole COVID thing, because it actually adds to the story and the paranoia and the tension of the story, and it is kind of related to it. So that works. So that's the project I'm on at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting how it affects different people. I know with some of the writers we talked to, they were just shut right down. They were unable to write, you know, I guess the
wow.
stressing
yeah.
level. And then other people they escape in the writing. So of course they don't. There's no issue at all.
Yeah.
In fact, they could jump in more because they wanted to get away from the outside world, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. I get, like you say, I think it affected people in different ways.
Yeah. So what's next for James? What's the next project you're on?
For me, I have two novels. One that was almost finished. It just needs another couple of goes through. It's written. I just need a bit more polish, a bit of editing. And I'm determined to get that out this year. It's based on one of my short stories. And I started that. I got to the point to finish that just before the whole Hellbound thing sort of happened. And, it was just left on the virtual shelf. So I want to get that finished. There's another one I'd like to at least finish it so I can publish next year. And in the mix, obviously, is Hellbound. We've got a bunch of anthologies out this year. We're putting out, obviously, we've got the Werewolf book coming out. We have a contract with an association with the Bram Stoker estate, so we're working closely with them. So we've got more Dracula and Bram Stoker stuff coming out this year. So, yeah. And then obviously there's the Ghostwriter. I need to invent like another 2 days per week, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it seems that way at times, doesn't it? You know,
it does. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I know. Well, it's certainly always an interesting conversation, and we're glad you could make it. Of course, the guest we have, he's Mr. James H. Longmore. So thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, James.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.